Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Shannon from the Fellowship of the Spirit Group in Haddonfield, New Jersey. Yes, Shannon.
My name is Shannon. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Shannon.
It's good to be here. I've had the opportunity to speak up here a couple times in the past. The gal who asked me to speak, I don't think is here yet, so I won't thank her. But I will thank the group. I will thank you guys for allowing me to be a part of something that I really wanted nothing to be a part of for a long, long time, bouncing out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Tiffany read the set-aside prayer. That's one of my favorite prayers. We actually we say that at the beginning of our home group back in Haddonfield. Don P. was a gentleman who passed away many years ago, who sponsored many men and helped a lot of men. He actually came up with that prayer, and I think it's a perfect prayer. Please set aside everything I think I know about everything. What I'm going to say tonight, what I think you want me to say tonight. I think probably the biggest gift I've been given as a direct result of this thing called an awakening through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is to tell you that I don't know. And for people that have been through the process, you probably know what I'm talking about. People that don't know what I'm talking about, that's okay. What I mean when I say I don't know is, man, for years, you know, I bounced in and out of these rooms, actually since the 80s, since the late 80s, and I was just so defended and so guarded, and I knew, I mean, I was so full of me. I could see you walking across the parking lot. I already knew what you were going to ask me, how I was going to respond, and then you'd say this, and I'd say that. If you'd say, do we have a sponsor? And I'd say, yes, I got three of them, and even though I had none, and, you know, and I was so defended, and I was so guarded, and I knew everything. You ever hear the old, it's kind of an old people, a lot of people don't, they listen to respond. Have you heard that before? That's for me. I mean, that's my defense when I get here. You start telling me something, I'm not. Yeah, no, I know. And guys would say, I haven't even said anything yet, but I know. You know, and that almost killed me. That almost killed me. I'm so full of me. There's no room for you, and there's no room for God, and there's no room for God's kids. And I've got, my ego's got such an investment in my appearance and what you think of me. I can't let you know I'm broken. I can't let you know that my scorecard is red zero. I got to come in here, even though 2 days before I came to this meeting, I'm not talking about now, I'm talking about when I washed up on the shores of Alcoholics Anonymous. 2 days previously, in a little borough called Brooklyn, New York, where I got sober, I was seriously considering taking my own life. I mean, that's the best way to put it. There's no way to sugarcoat it. I couldn't stand the pain anymore. And I'm not saying anything that's unique. As I say that, I saw a couple heads nod. I'm here to let you know that's not normal thinking. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is, you say, you know, I felt like killing myself in detox, and the whole room goes, oh, yeah, me too. Try that at work. Try that especially if you're in the corporate field. You know what I mean? You try a construction site, you can get away with it there. Those guys understand. But you know what I'm like? It's a normalcy thing here that when you get to a point, really, I think Bill describes it best in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what he says is, you'll come to that jumping off place where drinking sucks and not drinking sucks. What do you do? The thing that I sort of thought worked for a long time since I was a little boy, it made me feel okay. It made me feel, you know, here's the thing, and it's funny, the longer you stay sober, and people that have been through this will identify with what I'm about to say. Am I being recorded, by the way? I just want to make sure that I'm not, no, it's off. Okay. It is? Okay. No, I just didn't want to cover it up with these sheets, that's all. I don't have a warrant for my arrest. Not that I know of. Where was I? I was talking about what?
Little boy.
Little boy. Thank you. The longer that I've stayed sober and the more work that I've done and I've continued to do and continue to have new experiences over and over here in Alcoholics Anonymous, my story changes. And I'll tell you why my story changes is I become honest. I mean, I've been telling stories for so long up here at the podium. It's 6 months sober, a year sober, 2 years sober. I remember there was a time when I was in the middle of my talk, and literally right in the middle of the talk, I said, you know, that actually never happened. But I had been saying it for so long. It wasn't because I was a liar. It wasn't because I was trying to be devious. It just, I've been telling that story for so long, it became a reality. And I think that's the difference between delusion and denial is delusion. Denial, I kind of know it's, you know, but delusion, it's like the book says, I can't differentiate the truth from the false. And I'm telling stories. And one of the things that I used to say all the time when I got up and I got a chance to speak is I used to say all the time, I can remember my first drink like it was yesterday. Truth of the matter is I have no idea when my first drink was. I have no clue. I don't remember my first drink. But I can remember around the time when I started to feel what drink did for me. And that's what's important. And what it did for me is I know some personal people in this room, and I've been around, I've heard people talk about it in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, is I don't know if it made me, some people say it made them feel okay. For the first time in my life, it just kind of felt like an anvil was pushed off my chest, right? I felt like I could kind of let my hair down and just breathe a little bit better. The first grade's hard. You know, you're supposed to laugh, by the way. Come on, what is this, freaking Al-Anon? Oh, my God. Well, there we go. Holy shit. But it, you know, it made me feel okay. It made me feel like I was going to be able to hang out and do this thing called life. And you know, ironically, through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and good sponsorship and having a home group and doing a lot of commitments and a lot of service and saying yes when I asked to serve, what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, it's given me the freedom that I was continuing to chase in booze. It really has. Like I can look at another human being today and not stare at the ground. I haven't thought about hurting myself in a long time, a real long time, actually since I got sober. And you know, and I'll digress as I peel back the layers here in my share. But you know, it talks about in our literature that you'll have a whole new attitude and outlook upon life. And I do. You know, one of the things that really sticks near and dear to my heart still to this day is I don't want to hurt anybody anymore. I really don't. And I still do at times. I have this thing called a human condition, and I do hurt people, and I say things that are out of, you know, but I really don't. I really mean that with my heart and soul. I hurt a lot of people. You know, and here's the thing is I hear this sometimes, and, you know, back when I was drinking, I heard a lot of people not drinking. I heard, that's important to talk about. I think any time that a mic gets shoved in front of my face, I'm not here to be funny. I'm not here to wow anybody. I'm definitely not here to help anybody. I used to think that. I get asked, oh, I got to go up to Quaker Time and help those folks out up there. Trust me, you're doing fine. I don't need to tell you this either, but I'll tell my ego this. You guys are doing just fine without me. I'm just another guy, and you know that Lauren has to come up here and share their experience with, and that's all it is here. And what you guys do with it's none of my business. What my sponsees do with it's none of my business. I'm not here to help troubleshoot them and motivate them and be a cheerleader for them. I got a couple of my guys came here tonight. Thank you, Brian and Brian, for riding up with me. And I love bringing new guys on road trips, because you don't have to think about yourself. You know, they do plenty of it for you. You know, I asked Brian, we left Haddonfield's an hour and a half. I asked him how he was doing. He just got done telling me how he was doing when we pulled in the parking lot up there. So, but it's good to have you guys with me. I thank you. Thank you for coming up here. I was a guy that was always leaving Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the guy that's always raising his hand. And one thing I'd like to ask is before I get deep into my share here is how many people are here within their first year of sobriety, if you don't mind me asking? Wow. Wow. How about first 6 months? Wow. That's awesome. Welcome home. And if you're like me and you've got less than 6 months, and again, I'm assuming, but if you're like me for many years, if you have under 6 months and you're not tapped into the program here and you don't have a spot, when I say welcome home, you probably don't like that I said that. Because it doesn't feel like home, probably. It probably feels icky, and it probably feels weird, and you can't wait to just, I don't know, find a girl and, you know, and maybe get in a relationship. I don't know. But I'll tell you, for the people that raise their hands, there's good news and there's bad news. What do you want first? Of course, right? The bad news? There is a solution. You know what the good news is? There is a solution. See, there is a solution to this thing called alcoholism, and I love our book. Bill depicts it best. He said, but almost none of us like what we have to do here. I want the pain to go away, you know, and I want a fellowship, and I want to bum cigarettes, and I want to go to diners, and I want to hang out, and maybe find a relationship. I don't know, maybe not, but I don't, that stuff there is, it's, no, I'm not interested in that stuff. And for years, isn't it funny? We come to a 12-step program and most of us will die never doing the 12 steps. It's kind of ironic, and that's the power of the ego, and that's the power of alcoholism. For many, many, many years, I bounced in and out of the rooms, and for the life of me, I couldn't understand why. I'll tell you two things that baffled me. One, why I couldn't stay sober, but the one thing that really baffled me is to this day, I still know people that are still sober today when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous back in 1988, and not only are they still sober, but they're happy too. And that baffled me, because every time I put down the drink, I felt like I was doing time. It was like X's on a calendar. You know what I mean? Just like, all right, 38 days, you know, and I was just, how you doing? Grateful. And can't you tell by the vein coming out of my forehead? And I've got four energy drinks and I'm, you know, and somebody would say, you know, hey, we're going to, like I said in the beginning of my talk, I was so full of me. There was no room for you. And in our 12 and 12, there's a question in there, and it says, why must every AA hit bottom? Why does our scorecard have to read zero? Why do we have to get to a point where I talked about when I first started sharing, where I'm sitting home in my apartment, and I'm on my laptop, and I'm typing in the least painful way to commit suicide. Why do we have to get to that point? The book says, we don't know if we can answer that riddle. But I'll tell you, for me, the reason why I think I had to get to that point where I was staring into the abyss is so that I would show up and do this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. All of it. All of it. And I don't do it perfectly. I don't ever want to stand up here at a podium and tell you guys, man, now that I've gotten sober, oh my God, like, life is just amazing and it's perfect and I've never had a problem. By the way, life is amazing. I do need to say that. Life is amazing today. The man who walked through this, who showed up on these doors again in Brooklyn a few years back, if he was walking across that parking lot right now, I wouldn't even recognize him. I wouldn't. And he wouldn't recognize me. He'd probably hear me talking and go, oh, Jesus Christ, what a loser. You know, like, because that's how I was. There's my ego again. I'm defended. You're talking about God. You're talking about the solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're talking about service. You're talking about the things that I'm not interested in. I just want to get the best bedroom in the sober house. You know, if I get that, I'm good. You know what I mean? And maybe start dating the girl that I met in the psych center. If I got those two things, you're laughing out of identification. If I can just have those two things, right? I mean, and I don't know that I'm doing this stuff. It's not something on the forefront of my conscience, but watch my feet. Watch my actions. That's exactly what I'm doing. And there was a lot of people that were saying, Shannon, I mean, buddy, we've been watching you for years. You just keep coming in and out of here. I mean, I've had guys pleading with me, dude, let me take you through the steps. Let me take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But see, there's a problem there. And this is what I see with a lot of men that I sponsor, a lot of guys I see at the home group, and a lot of guys that I see in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this isn't a judgment. This is me. It's a direct reflection of me. See, the problem is for people like me, when I start to feel better here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you give me 38 days and some meals, and I start working out again, and I start feeling better about myself, I'm not interested in this stuff. And I would kind of say stuff. Somebody would sit me down and say, hey, do you have a big book? And I'd say, I got like four of them back in my apartment. Why don't you grab one, meet me tomorrow night? I'll start taking you through the process. We'll open it right to page one, we'll do a circle and try, and we'll go on a journey. And I'm thinking, no. But I don't really say that. I'll just say, okay, yeah, I'll call you. And he'll give me his number, and as soon as he turns the corner, I'm like, I'm not interested, man. Or somebody would say, hey, you know, you want to join our home group? You want to do a commitment? You want to do service? And I don't know. So I'll tell you, if there's anybody new here and you're in a lot of pain, you're in a lot of trouble, and you're like me and you're staring into the darkness, you're staring into the abyss. If there's anybody in here who's been through this process, please grab a hold of them and take them through the process. Get them now. Grab a hold of them. Please. My sponsor taught me early on, you know, he even will pop questions to me from time to time. He's out in Cedar Rapids, but we talk on the phone every week. We got another call tomorrow. But he'll ask me, how many men are you approaching? Not how many men are you sponsoring, not how many guys are you taking through, how many guys are you approaching? And that's a good question that I'd like to pose to you guys here tonight in the home group and the gals as well. How many people are we approaching? Are you paying attention when we're outside and we're fellowshipping and we're vaping and we're having fun and we're smoking cigarettes? Are you paying attention to that girl that's standing over in the parking lot by herself, staring at the ground? Just a thought. I mean, if anyone's been through the book here, right from the preface all the way to the stories, the entire book, right from the Roman numerals, is continually smashing home what this whole journey is really all about. Me serving you. And when I'm not done, I'm not doing any of that crap. I'm like a couple of the faces I see here right now yawning and looking at me like, I wish he would just shut the fuck up. Oh my God. I just want to go home and think, get on Tinder. Jesus Christ, just shut up. Oh my God. I see it now. 8-10 faces. That's okay. That's okay. It's me. I mean, I did that for years. That's why you ever hear the saying, if you spot it, you got it? It's so easy to spot. Alcoholism is such a, I mean, isn't it funny? You're dying. You're in a psych center. You got cuts on your arm. You want to die. And then you got like a week sober. And all of a sudden it's like, what are you looking at? You know, it's like, shut up, behave, you know, but I get that. You know what I'm saying? I love good men in my life would say things like, you know, I used to walk around like I was carrying two plasma TVs. Like, hey, what's up? You know, like I was, my arms are that big around. I'm like, what's up? What are you looking at? You know, wearing jujitsu shirts. I weigh 85 pounds. And why do I do that? Because I'm afraid. I'm scared of you, man. You might find out. You might start meddling around with stuff that I've been trying to run from my entire existence. And that's not cool with me. If I start getting involved in a home group and you guys are asking me to do things like be accountable and being transparent and being honest and amends and inventory, man, I've been telling you, when you're not done yet, that stuff is, you ever sponsor somebody and they do the third step and you get them to the fourth step and then it takes them like 9 years to do the fourth step? You know what I'm talking about, right? Isn't that true? It's just, the ego is just so, I'm like, I'll get a home group, I'll go to diners, I'll even pick guys up, I'll drive 10 miles to pick up a new guy and take him to meetings, but then you put a pen and paper in front of me and it's like, you know, you're like, you tap the brakes and it's like, hold on here, and you call up the guy, you ask him 3 weeks later, hey, how you doing? Oh, I'm still in the first column. I don't judge him. I get it. You know what I do? I love them. And I let them know, you know. You might want to consider maybe, you know, really getting into this. But this thing is so, you know, the book says that it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's just, it's so amazing. It's called the reemerging or the resurgence of the ego. That's really what it is here. And that's why I think it's so critical, man, to get new guys. When they raise their hand or new girls and they say, hi, I'm new. Man, if you're awake and you've been through this process or you're going through the process, grab a hold of them, man. Because not only does their life depend on it, so does yours. So does yours. And that's the only reason why I'm here tonight. I don't care what you guys think of me. I don't care what comes out of my mouth. I do my best to not swear up here or be profane or shout a bunch of empty, shallow opinions with no experience. I try my best to do that. But really, at the end of the day, I'm here because I was taught to say yes. That's it. That's why I'm here tonight. I was taught to say yes. My feet just kind of, when Lauren asked me, I didn't even hesitate. I looked at my calendar and I said yes. And I'm up here. It's so humid right now. I'm dying up here. Like, really? Like, holy shit. So what? So what? I'm going to get in my car tonight, and I'm going to drive home with a couple of God's kids in my car, and we're going to do like we were doing on the way up here and play 80s music trivia and just laugh and enjoy freedom. And I didn't know what that word, I had no idea what that meant. And I love what our book says. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. And I think that's really what I'm going to expound on tonight. I don't know how old I was when I picked up my first drink. It's not really that important. But I'll tell you, when I started to feel the effect produced by alcohol, I loved what it did for me. It was medicine. And that's not the only reason why I drank. I think that it's always important. Sometimes you hear speakers say, I'm not going to really get into a big war story. We all know how to drink. I think that robs the newcomer. I think you need to identify with the way that I drank. Absolutely. If I just get up here and talk about the solution, I'm not talking about the problem, I don't think that you're going to do what it takes to look for the solution. Because you need to identify with me. And the Dr. Silkworth says it in the doctor's opinion. If we don't talk about the physical, then the story is incomplete. We're not telling the whole story. And I'll tell you what the physical and what the mental looks like. What the physical and mental looks like, I'm not going to start back on then when I was 12, but I'm going to talk about when my alcoholism really started to progress and my drinking really started to progress. This is what alcoholism looks like in Shannon's life. I'm at work. I got a promotion. I'm down in the financial district of Manhattan. I quit drinking for about a month on my own because I see it starting to get a little weird. It's just getting a little weird, and I'm telling myself I don't need to drink anymore. And then I'll get a week. I'll get 2 weeks. And all of a sudden I get 3 weeks, and I start thinking, this isn't really that. This is nothing. I can do this. Maybe I was making a big deal out of this. But I'm still telling myself I'm not going to drink. And all of a sudden, the VP's in town, and he comes and he knocks on my door, and he says, Shannon, tonight we're going down to Suspenders. It's a bar down on Wall Street in Manhattan. We're going to go to Suspenders, and the CEO's in town from Japan. And when he comes into town, you know, you're supposed to kind of go there and roll out the red carpet and kiss his butt. And he said, why don't you come down and have a couple pops with us? He leaves, and all of a sudden, immediately, I start thinking to myself, actually, what I tell him is, I don't know if I'm going to go or not. And he was like, huh, all right. And then he walks away. And when he walks away, he starts walking down the hallway. All of a sudden, the chatter starts in my head. It's like, Shannon, you're a manager. Do you really think that's a good idea to not show up when the CEO's in town? I mean, go and have a pop. Have a soda. Go there, and you got to do your job. This is part of the corporate world. Go there. Thank you. Tighten up your tie. Go down there. So here's what happened. So I started saying, all right, I'm going to go. I'm not going to drink. I'm just going to go do my job, do the right thing. I show up at the bar, and everybody knows what happens, right, when I get to the bar. So I get to the bar, and I have a ginger ale because I don't want to drink, because every time I drink, it gets ugly. And last time I drank, I ended up here and there, and I'm done. And again, I'm kind of speeding up my alcoholism to get to a point here, because what I really want to do tonight is I want to talk about this. The spirit. I want to talk about the soul. I want to talk about this malady. And more importantly, what I really want to expound on is I want to talk about the transformation that has taken effect by treating that malady here in Alcoholics Anonymous and how it's affected not only my life, but everyone's life that's come in contact with me. So I'm at the bar and I'm having a ginger ale. Everyone else is partying. The CEO shows up. The VP shows up. You know, an hour later, all of a sudden, you know, right, the ties start to loosen up, the music starts to get a little bit better, and, you know, and I'm thinking, man, and I'm watching everybody, guys that don't know me, they don't know I have a drinking problem, the ladies coming out with the shots and the trays, and I'm watching all my bosses and my peers get drunk and have fun, a couple of them disappear in the bathroom, come out, looks like Rolaid powder or something on their nose, I'm not sure what that is, but you know, they're coming out and the music's starting to get, and I'm like, all of a sudden, the chatter starts to kind of elbow me, and it's like, dude, the CEO's here. He comes here once every 3 years. This is how you get promotions, homeboy. You got to get out there, man. Do some shots with him. Buy him a drink. You know, and I start going, oh, man, I can't. Jesus Christ. All right, I'm going to have one. I'm going to have a gin and tonic. And that's it. And then I'm going to go home. They say that all action is born in thought. Joe and Charlie talk about that in their big book studies. I love it. All action is born in thought. I thought about that drink before I picked it up. You know, sometimes you hear responses. I was just walking down the road and I slipped and a beer went right in my mouth. Negative. It's not how it went down, brother. So I have one. And as I'm drinking that one, that gin and tonic, oh my God, can you, it's, all of a sudden, man, it's like the music starts to sound a little bit better, right? And I'm standing up a little bit straighter. Two drinks later, I'm up on the pool table. I'm like, yeah, you know, and I'm doing my tie's sideways wrapped around my head. I'm looking like Rambo and, you know, and I'm having fun and I'm doing this. And, you know, and my boss is saying to me, he's starting to see me drinking. He's like, hey, don't forget tomorrow morning. We got a big meeting. The CEO is going to be here. The VP's here with the EVP. We got a big meeting. Make sure you wear your best tie. Show up. Don't smell like booze. He's like, you know, and you know what's ironic? Me, just like everybody else in that bar, said, oh, absolutely. And the next morning, people went to work with donuts. And they had coffee and Dunkin', you know, and they had the Starbucks and the Dunkin' Donut. I don't know if you guys know New York too well, but in lower Manhattan, it's right ground zero. That's where the bar is. Pretty much ground zero. It's right there. At 4 a.m., I was in Washington Heights, which is north of the Bronx. It's long and short, that's far. It's really far. And it was because I took that first one. And when I looked at my boss, and he said, man, make sure you're here. And, you know, he doesn't know I got a drinking problem or anything, but he's starting to see me breakdance and do weird shit that he's never seen me do before. So he's starting to kind of get the, you know, I like, man, what's... This guy likes to tip him back a little bit, you know, and I'm looking him right in the face, and I'm, you know, and I'm saying, Scott, of course, tomorrow, of course. And at 4 a.m., I'm walking to the subway, and I got, again, and now I got to call HR, and I got to make up this whopper of a story of what happened, and I was on my way home, and there was like these thugs and blah, blah, right? And I don't go to work the next morning. And that's just one, I mean, that's a Tuesday for me. You know what I mean? I'm not, trust me, that is not, I mean, oh my goodness. But I think what I really wanted to, can you guys relate with that? The people that drink like that, you're only going to go out and have a couple, right? And then the promises get broke, or the girlfriend with the real tears running down her face. There's so many examples that we can use here tonight. I promise this time it's good. And man, you know what's ironic? I believe what I'm saying. I believe what I'm saying. No way. Oh my God. I'm done. And I love the book talks about that we have no effective mental defense, not against the fourth drink. We're not talking about allergy anymore. Now we're talking about the mental. We're talking about the thing that punks me every time. And that's my mind. I have a mind that's continually, constantly trying to convince me that this time it's going to be a party like it was back in 1992. And you know the irony here is and I do a lot of detox commitments and H&I and stuff, and I ask the people that all the time, and I love the answer that I get. The first thing I'll say when I sit down, I'll be like, is there still a party out there? You know, and they're just like, oh, no. But they get a week sober, and the mind starts talking to them again, and it convinces them it's going to be like it was back in the 90s. You're going to put your Cavaricis back on again. People that laugh are my age, so everyone else is like, what the hell is that? It's not vape juice. No, they were a style of pants we used to wear way back in the day. But right, it's going to be like it was back in the, you know, and I'm going to go to the clubs, and I'm going to meet her, and it's going to be, you know, and I think that's really, when this mental obsession that it talks about, I think if you really dissect and look back in the AA rearview mirror in hindsight, I'm not actually obsessing over the drink. I'm obsessing over the stories that go along with the drink. Right? I'm going to have fun. I'm going to do this. I'm going to run into Hugh Hefner, and he's going to go, Jesus, where have you been my whole life? You need to run my company. And, you know, and I'm going to meet her, and I'm going to run into, and I'll be walking down the street to jump on the subway and trip over a bag of money, and it's going to be awesome. And I'm going to... And 2 weeks after all those thoughts and all that chatter is going on, I'm in Bellevue Psych Center on suicide watch. My mind wouldn't let me see that. The stories Fred and Jim in the book? I think Bill uses those guys, those illustrations are perfect. And I love when he's talking about Fred, where he says, as I crossed the threshold, the thought came that a highball would be nice. That's all, nothing more. And then he talks about the unbearable pain and the agony and the suffering. The mind wouldn't let him see that. And my message here tonight is anything, is if you're in here tonight, I'll tell you, if you're wired like me and you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic like me, of the hopeless type,
your mind will punk you every single time it can. It'll tell you that this time it's going to be different. Or I like what Bill says, or Bill uses another example, and he says, or it may not even try to punk you at all. You may justifiably go out and get drunk. F her. You know, I'll show her, or I'll show him, or I'll... That's even more wacky. Like, I know I'm going to burn my life to the ground. See ya. You know, and I go and drink. And normal people that aren't wired are like, is he out of his goddamn... What the... We call that plain insanity. How many people in here have told yourself, this is it, I'm never going to drink again and drink again? How many people? Me. Okay. Sitting in a jail cell, sitting in a psych center, my ass hanging out of the pajamas, paper slippers on, sad, lonely, no family, burned my life to the ground, all bridges to human contact are severed, I got nothing. A couple guys come in doing an H&I commitment and say, how you doing? And I do the same thing that I hear now. And they say, well, why don't you give me a call when you get out? And you know what? And this is what I was talking about a little bit earlier tonight. As I take that number from them, and I really mean it with all my heart and soul, that I am definitely going to call this guy when I get out of here. No questions. In fact, I'm going to call him before I leave. Man, Jesus. And then guess what happens? I get a couple meals and some sleep. And one day I wake up and, I don't know, I'm shuffling around with, my whole life is in a garbage bag in a drawer of a psych center. My whole life is in that. And I'm rustling around and they're looking for something. All of a sudden I see this guy's number and I'm like, Joe from Queens A. I'm like, get the... And I never called Joe. And yet 3 days before that, I met with every moral fiber in my body that I was going to call him. And I was going to ask him to sponsor me and I was going to ask him to help me. And this just kept going on and on and on and on for decades. Not for 6 months, not for decades. For a long time. In fact, I think what's important to talk about too, before I start really talking about the shift that's taking place in my life, is I had 7.5 years sober and I picked up a drink again. And I picked up the drink for the same reason I'd pick up a drink if I had 2 days sober. If I had 20 years, 7 years, seven, I stopped growing spiritually. That's it. I made a beginning. Who knows how long that beginning is? It could be 3 months, 3 years, 30 years. But I stopped growing spiritually. That's it. That's why I'm here tonight. That's why I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here to continue to grow spiritually. The gal read the 12 steps when we first got up here. And I hear it, and I used to get caught up in that too. Is like I talk about this awakening that it talks about in the 12 step. Like, if your awakening is past tense, please call me. I'll take you through the process. I really mean that. We get caught up. Oh man, back in 1998, man, that spiritual awakening I had. Woo! Yeah, but what are you doing today? What's going on today? How you doing in your life today? Oh. Man, that awakening, boy, you should have been there. Woo! And we talk about it like it's a past tense thing, and I did too, and I'm here to report to you tonight that this awakening that it talks about, I'm still having it. It's happening right here, right now. I'm continuing to grow. It's very important. I'm not up here to say I continue to be perfect and I never have problems. I used to hear speakers say that, I'm like, damn, what is it like to be perfect? I have no idea. I went through a dark spot in sobriety 2 years ago that I wouldn't wish on anyone. They call it the dark night of the soul. For 5 months, I was in my apartment, groveling. I mean, I was in a lot of pain. I can't even put it into human words how much pain I was in, but let me tell you something. It hurt everything. It hurt bad. And I was confused, and I didn't understand. And it was in the form of a breakup. That's not the pain I was experiencing. I thought it was. That's what the ego told me. But what was really happening is, as I was, well, I'll tell you what exactly was happening, is the third step was coming alive in my life and I didn't know it. I made a decision that no matter what comes down the pipes, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm not, it's God, it's you. And it was being handed to me on a silver platter. And it hurt. I used to say things like, I didn't ask for this. My sponsor would say, yes, you did. Embrace it. Embrace the suffering. Embrace it. This is the thing you've been running from since you were a little boy. Long before you even picked up a drink, Shannon. Man, everyone ever been in pain before, right? Sober? A week sucks. You know, we all think we're tough guys in here. We're not. I'm not. I mean, my threshold, I'm like, all right, enough. I'm good, uncle. You know, it was actually, I'm sorry. It was 7.5 months. Almost on a nightly basis, going home after going to a meeting, doing a speaking commitment, going to a detox, whatever the hell I was doing that night, working with a couple guys in my house, doing book work, I would cry myself to sleep. I would wake up. I didn't even want to wake up. I was in so much pain. And I remember, in the message that I have here tonight, there's a couple reasons why I brought that up. A, life's going to show up. Life's going to show up. But the more important message here, the reason why I bring that up, is something so profound and powerful that my sponsor said to this day when I say it, it gives me chills. As I called him up, it was one of those long nights and I was crying, and it was one of those crying where I couldn't even breathe crying. I didn't understand, and I didn't even know where the pain was coming from. My ego couldn't attach to itself. There was nothing, there was no labels. It wasn't her. It wasn't that. I'm just like, and I remember I was crying, and he said something really powerful to me, and he said, Shannon, take a deep breath for a second. And I did. I had 6 years sober at the time. I don't really remember. And he said, I know you're going through a lot right now, kiddo. And I know you're in a lot of pain. And he said, but take a minute and picture where you would be right now if you hadn't done all the work up to this point, where you would be right this second. And it blew me away. I'd be hanging from a shoelace in my closet. Even though I was going through pain, I was okay. And if you're going through anything right now, and if you're transparent about it and you're sharing it with somebody, you got a road dog or a road, whatever the hell a girl road dog is, road something, road cat, no, but you know what, if you've got somebody in your life that you're sharing this stuff with and you got something going on, I'm here to tell you, you're okay. You're okay. Abby says to Bill, sitting down at the kitchen table in Brooklyn, he says, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work, and self-sacrifice for others, he would not survive the certain, you know what that means, right? It's coming. The certain trials and low spots ahead. Man, yep, I'm okay. I was okay. And one more thing on that, and then I'll digress here, is even though I look back through all of this now, you know what the cool thing about through all that pain that I was going through? It wasn't suffering. I think there's a difference between pain and suffering. I wasn't suffering. I was in a lot of pain, but I was okay. You know what's amazing? One of my sponsees brought it up. That's why you need sponsees in your life. We were driving down the road, and I didn't even see it. And I was telling the story about what my sponsor said, how profound it was. And he looked at me and he said, did you think about drinking during that whole time? And he wasn't doing it to quiz me because he had like a week sober. I mean, that's default. I'm going there. I need medicine. And it hit me. I looked at him and I said, man, you know what's amazing? I didn't think about drinking one time. Not one time. That's the freedom that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. And sometimes I take it for granted. I get up here and talk about the spirit and the malady. I haven't thought about a drink in a long time. I used to drink when I didn't think about drinking. I used to not think about it, think about it, and I drank. And I just, oh, geez, how'd this happen again? Oh, my God, what the hell? I haven't thought about a drink in a long time. Not only have I not thought about a drink in a long time, but all the things that seemed so far out of reach that I used to hear other people talking about, like all these amends that they had made, and they had a relationship with their mother again, and they were free, and they could walk down the street and not have to cross the other side. Because I used to hear things like that, and subtly I would think, you know, one day I'll get there. One day I'll be able to. You know, today Alcoholics Anonymous gave my mother her son back. From the guy that had an order of protection against my mother, put an order of protection against me at the end because I was violent, and I just was so uncontrollable, and I had no idea. No one knew what would happen once Shannon started drinking again. Because towards the end, I mean, I just drank to oblivion. I drank, and the only prayer that I would say back when I was getting real in the real dark stages of my alcoholism is, if you're up there, please don't let me wake up. That's the only, and I would wake up and curse him. I would curse God. I used to spit at God. You know, it's his fault. I'm a victim. He's the reason why. And I did the thing that most of us are going to die not doing here. I said, I need help. The book says that the resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. I think pride is right there with it. A lot of times we sit up here, I hear it myself anyway. I'll speak for myself, and I hear the sad stories, and I hear about people. I heard a speaker talk about it the other night. There's probably someone here in Quakertown right now that they're going to get medicine right now at the liquor store, the Acme, or the wherever, and they don't even know there's a solution. They don't even know this is going on right now up here. That is sad. I think what's even sadder is how many more people do know there's a solution and will still die from alcoholism. You don't have to suffer anymore. If there's anything that I say here tonight, that's really my message here tonight. You don't have to suffer anymore. That's what was told to me. It was a promise. The guy looked me dead in the eyes. And he said, you don't have to suffer anymore. Stop puffing your chest out. Tough guys, tough. He used to say things, and he would say it with love. Sometimes. But, you know, because, I mean, you know, ironically, I mean, he did. He always said it with love, but my sensitive ego would filter what he would say. He hurt me. He's mean to me. Because he would say things like, you know, victims will get sober, but they won't stay sober. Stop. Just stop being a tough guy. We're not in jujitsu class. Knock it off. We're in Alcoholics Anonymous. Go be upset. Go put the chairs away. Go do this. And I got to tell you, man, since the day that I've walked in here, and I got a new sponsor now, you know, the best way to describe why I do all the things that I do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I incorporate the three legacies, the unity, service, and recovery in my life today, and I do that through sponsoring guys, through saying yes when asked to speak, through detoxes, through jails, through amends, through living a life of prayer and meditation, being a servant, having a home group. You know, and I'll tell you, if you come, I started a group, God started a group, used me as the vessel, semantics. About 5 months ago, I started a little big book group down in this little town, Haddonfield, and it's cool. It's taken flight. It's, you know, and there's not even this many people there, and it's not really a numbers thing, but I'm seeing people get well there, and they're picking up commitments, and they're picking up their chips, and they're having AA birthdays, and it's cool. You know, it's really cool. But I'll tell you what's important is, you ever come to my home group and you visit the home group, you'll be able to tell I'm a home group member by me not even announcing I'm a home group member. Because you'll see me in the trenches. You'll see me setting up the meetings. You'll see me getting everything ready. And I saw that tonight when I came here. I saw the guys putting the chairs and the speakers and, you know, that's the deal. So I do that. I sponsor, numbers aren't important, but I sponsor a lot of guys. At least that's what they tell me. I don't know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous. My life has become a life of service. And because of that, a shift has taken place inside of me that anyone that I come in contact benefits from. They heal. That mother that had an order of protection against me, and I wasn't allowed to come around holidays, and the only time I would call my mom would be collect from a correctional facility. She asked me a couple years ago, when I was down at her Florida house, and she asked me to she asked me to be the will of her estate, and you know, out of all the siblings, and she had a conversation with me. She said, you know, for years, Shannon, you used to come home and you'd be getting out of another rehab, and you would do, oh, Mom, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. She goes, you know, the past couple of years, when you made amends to me, I asked you to do one thing and one thing only, and that was just show up as a son. Do you know, for years, I tried doing that without power, and I couldn't. I meant it with every, Mom, that's easy. Show up as a son? Absolutely. And I couldn't. And as I started to do these steps, and as I started to show up as a beat-up, surrendered guy waving the white flag, I started to do everything that Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do. And the byproduct of that is I became a son. The byproduct of that is I became a sibling. The byproduct of that is I became an employee who didn't steal anymore. The byproduct of that is I actually, when I even hear tonight, as I look out before you, something has happened, and this is, and I've just gone through the steps again with a newer sponsor, and it's kind of ironic, it's cool. I don't look at you as separate from me anymore. I look at all of us as one, you know? And when I see you as one, and I see you as a soul, and one of God's kids, all I want to do is serve you. I can't make that up. That's not something I learned in a rehab or in a psych center. But I had to go through all that stuff to get to this, so for this transformation could take place. There's an old, I'm into Buddhism and Hinduism, and I know that the Eastern philosophy really resonates with me, and at the end of the day, it's all the same. It's all leading back to the one. But there's an old, kind of a cool little, quick little folklore story, whatever, mantra. And Hanuman is a god, a monkey god, and he's talking to Rama. He's talking to God, the one. And Rama says to him, monkey, who are you? And monkey says, when I don't know who I am, I serve you. When I know who I am, I am you. Newcomers, ignore that. You didn't know what the hell I just said. When I got here, I served you, and I continue to serve you. And through the practice and teachings of Alcoholics Anonymous, the reason why I bring that up, because it's my journey here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in here feeling separate. I came in here feeling broken. I came in here feeling defeated. I came in here staring into the abyss. I came in here with nothing. I came in here feeling so separate from you and so afraid and so guarded. And the universe said, just serve. Just serve at any capacity. Whatever's asked of you. And the more that I continued to serve and the more that I continued to say yes, what ended up happening is I became you. And the irony is I always have been. I always have been. When I drank, I think all I was really doing is trying to have a connection with something greater, with power. I mean, isn't it funny they call liquor spirits? I was trying to find what I have today, the spiritual fuel, the spiritual thing I have through booze. And it didn't work. And it almost killed me chasing it. But the irony is it was the segue and it was the bridge that I needed to come here tonight and to let you guys know that not only did you save my life, but you gave me purpose today. You gave me purpose today. You guys gave me that. And I'll end with this. I can't ever repay you back. There is no way in hell. I don't just say that to sound cool. There is no way in hell I'll ever be able to pay back what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me and my family. No way in hell. But I'll keep saying yes. Thank you.